to Season 3, Episode 34 of LOI Weekly. We're in a different room today. It might sound a little bit different. And we have Derek back on sounds after a bit of a hiatus, which is great to have. And we will mention a request that Derek has later on in the show.
It's not a musical request, just to be clear.
No.
It's an actual... although he has some very... interesting musical taste.
He does. Derek is pretty much responsible for any music you'll hear on LOI Weekly. We have Lee Desmond in, fresh from St. Patrick's Athletic's recent run and with a big, big game coming up on Friday against Waterford, weather permitting. Pat Devlin, as Cabin Teely manager / director of football and general League of Ireland legend, it must be said, is in studio as well. I think that's the first Cabin Teely person we've had on the show. And we will hear from Ronan Finn as well, who Dan spoke to after Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers on Friday night. And we will also be obviously discussing some big games ahead in the First Division in terms of the playoffs. And while the season might be over for many clubs, it certainly isn't for a select few, and lucky them, I suppose. How are we, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good, John. How are you keeping?
Good, yeah. Pat Devlin is in the house. What's the story?
What's the story? I'm here with you mad people. That's why I must be getting soft coming in here this hour of the morning.
You are one of the elder statesmen of League of Ireland management, and it must be... it must be interesting to be there for so long and see the changes and see how little changes, I suppose, as well over time, because you probably come across the same problems year in, year out.
You're absolutely correct. I suppose if someone asks what's the most disappointing part of it all, is that there hasn't been so many good changes, and there needs to be. There needs to be radical changes. I always hoped that there would be, but unfortunately it hasn't been. So it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle for many, many years for many clubs, and it's a pity. Hopefully now in the next couple of years we can see radical change. You get lads like Lee can make a career out of it. I mean a full-time career and make an industry out of it. I do think it needs radical changes.
Yeah, Lee, we before the show we already discussed like the cost of renting in Dublin and all that and how easy it is or difficult for a League of Ireland player. But it's been an interesting few days in the FAI front as well. Is it time to move on now that we can start afresh? Or what do you think? What do players make of it all?
Yeah, I think as players, you just sort of look after yourself and you know, take it in your stride. But yeah, we want the FAI to change. We want the governing body to look after the league and really push it on for us, because that's what other countries are sort of doing. And, you know, we are behind. You look at how the clubs are doing in Europe and all. You've got some players coming through, but overall, the teams aren't really at the level that we should be at. And yeah, I think we really want help from the FAI going forward.
What's the off season like for you in terms of wages coming in and that? What's it like at Pat's?
Most of the lads are on the dole, being honest. A few of the lads will pick up jobs. But then on top of that, you want a little breakaway as well. So not many players are going to hire if you want a little 2 or 3 week holiday. So that's the conundrum. But yeah, most of the lads are on the dole.
Dan, it's been an interesting few days for you. You've been on, I think you were on page 6 yesterday at the Independent, which is always interesting.
Page 1 the other day, John. Page 6 is...
You'll be on page 3 soon. But interesting few days, isn't it?
The email is 11:13 PM on Saturday night, sort of, you know, confirmed. I was meant to be off Sunday, Monday, having watching something on Netflix there, and then the email drops, just like, right, Mrs. is like, I'll see you in 3 days, just head it off. And sure, you know, I mean, there's closure, but there's no real closure at all. I mean, there's a finality in terms of John Delaney's time in Irish football being over. I mean, his time in Irish football has basically been done, really, since he went on the
gardening
leave. Pretty expensive gardening leave. Think of all that could be done with the money that was even spent
in the garden,
paying John Delaney during his gardening leave. I mean, you can do any sum you want from this saga. You can do any number of sums that will really get you down if you sort of look at the bottom line figures and think, you know, how investment for like, you know, 5, 10, 15 grand in certain places is an obstacle to getting stuff done. And you're talking about, what, 175 grand paid in gardening leave to someone who probably could have left earlier, but obviously there was a fear that there was going to be a big legal battle that would have cost them even more money. Either way, it's money going out of the game to people or to lawyers or to whoever, and no one benefits from it, really. So it's not really a happy story. You hope that there will be radical changes, as Pat mentions, but you need belief that that's going to happen. And it's hard to be sort of furnished with that belief at the moment. There's debates around the direction of the league. I do think there are people there who do have the best interests of the league at heart eventually. I think there's been a belated realisation in the last year or two that it's actually pretty important. I mean, the whole story, I mean, Pat's lived through all of this and is far more qualified to speak of this than any of us. What always frustrates me is that you think of, you know, the 90s when, you know, Ireland were qualifying for World Cups and major championships, and like football had all the political capital in the world. You know, everyone wanted to be associated with the football team. Every sponsor, every politician, everyone in life, every fan, every young kid wanted to play football. And amazingly, we managed to come out of that period with no... I mean, that was the time actually to get grounds and get things done to a certain standard. And there wasn't. And there was a complacency there that everything would always be okay because we'd have our players away and you know, we'd be fine. And it's only the last couple of years people have realised, well, actually, maybe we need to produce players here and produce an industry here.
Well, there was a huge...
And it hasn't happened. And we're paying for, like, you know, historical errors, and we did get the administrators we deserved as well.
There was a huge influx of interest in football, but it was in the Premier League, really, Pat. It never kind of translated to the League of Ireland in the 90s, and we're still lagging miles behind in terms of where we should be, I suppose.
Oh, great memories of 85 to 90, because obviously we won the Cup in 90, 34,000 in Lansdowne, and that was the Jack Charlton era and all that, and Opel was the main sponsor, and it did promise a lot now, I have to say, and delivered. But I sum it up by telling you a little story. I was manager of Drogheda, and there was a huge hullabaloo about, it's just a change for League of Ireland. We're getting floodlights in up in Drogheda, and this is it, you know. And I said, great. And Vincent Hovey, who's not well at the moment, wish him well, he's in Blackrock Hospital.
He's the father of the present chairman, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, Vincent was a gentleman, absolutely. But anyway, huge hullabaloo on the Friday night, and the Lord Mayor of Drogheda in, we're opening the floodlights. Mm. This is going to be the saviour of League of Ireland football, as it was then. Mm. We're getting floodlights in for the Friday night football. And lots of razzmatazz, and they put on the lights and we played the game and all. And the next day I'm driving by Donnybrook and I look at Wesley and I said, we never got floodlights, we got candles. Mm. These are real floodlights. Mm. And it summed up for me that, you know, maybe the people behind the scenes just didn't think, you know, hard enough about it and didn't do enough on at the time to sort of elevate the League of Ireland to a better level, a more professional level. I mean, Leo, any of the lads, you go away and you hear about academies and they all rave about academies here, but there's no such thing as an academy here. It's all a word. It's as simple as that. And back in the 85s, 90s, yes, you're right, we should have got in and we should have made sure that things were happening. But I think what happened was it became a big party. It became a long-term celebration and we went on. I always remember when we won the Cup in Bray, unbelievable. I said, this is the start for Bray. It wasn't, you know. Mm. It just didn't go on from that.
It's very disappointing, Lee, and it's hard not to be angry when you... I'm not a League of Ireland player, but I think you guys have been badly let down. I think young players have been badly let down by people who should have the interests of the game at heart. And it's hard to say we've progressed that much in all the years I've been following it, 20 years anyway. I think the standard might be better, but you guys are going on the dole in the off season.
Yeah, so whoever comes into the FAI, we just want them to put the league first, really. You know, there's still players coming through somehow because the clubs are doing everything they can, but they need help. They need help, and money is a big part of that. So yeah, we just want whoever comes into the FAI next to give us more of a hand. And going back to academies, like you're saying that we don't really have any academies, but on top of that, the clubs, there's so many players coming through the academies in England, they're getting pulled out of school. And then majority of people don't make it and they have no education. Like that's myself now. I've come back with no leaving cert. And I'm only starting college next Monday, actually. So there is a top side to academies, but the clubs over there also need to be doing more for education for players.
Just to remind people, Lee, where were you in England?
I was in Newcastle, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how would you describe your experience you had away?
Not good, being honest. I've only sort of accepted that sort of the last year or two. Like, when I was over there, like, I was struggling, homesickness, bad. But I just kept telling myself, no, it'll come good. And even when I came home, like I have some great experiences and great memories that'll stay with me forever, but like overall it was really difficult. I struggled with homesickness. Probably the club didn't do enough to help me. And then once you let go, back over here, hadn't a clue about the League of Ireland. Went into Shell's 19s, no education. And as I said, I'm only starting that now at 24 years old.
Mm. How many years did you do at Newcastle?
Two. Yeah.
Mm. What age were you when you went over there then?
16, so I left school after 4th year.
And who was your club in Ireland, in Dublin?
Cherry Orchard.
So a good nursery down the years. And who was looking after you in Newcastle then? Like, who was your coach, or how did it go?
Under 18s would have been Dave Watson, ex-Everton captain.
Yeah.
And Kev Richardson, who played for Arsenal and Aston Villa. I think he was over in Spain as well. And then up in the reserves would have been Peter Beardsley and Willie Donaghy.
Peter Beardsley's been in the news, of course, recently as well.
Well,
I've never seen him bully anyone. Mm. But, yeah, like...
Was he old school?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, coming up to the reserves for the first time. He was very good. He'd fill you with lots of confidence. Then as soon as you sort of establish yourself in the reserves, yeah, he changed. And as I said, I've never seen him actually bully anyone, but he was very harsh on a lot of people.
It was kind of tough love, was it? Or
no, I don't think so, to be honest.
Sounds more like tough than love.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Is that your style of management, Devo?
Well, you know, I'm listening to Lee. I worked for Newcastle for 3-4 years. And, you know, whether it's Liverpool, Newcastle, Blackburn, you know, there's certain people with different personalities. And for a lad like Lee going over... you know, I didn't have to stay there. I can get on the plane and come back home, and they had to stay. And I know how tough it was. It's really, really tough. When I mentioned academy, I meant facilities rather than the education. Mm. Side. And you're absolutely correct. And I'm delighted to hear you're going back into education, because I think that's the thing to do. I remember a very famous fellow said to me many years ago, if you're going to choose to play professional football, it's very difficult to carry both the education side and that. And I think a lot of the clubs in England would still think that way, that if you're there to be a professional footballer, and they're not really that interested in educating you. That would be my feeling.
There's
on
nothing
it.
From them out of it.
No, that's what I'm saying. So no. They want you as a professional footballer. However, if someone decides to do both, you know, they will accommodate you. But as you know, the priority is your football. And then you're absolutely correct about personalities, whether it's your academy manager, your coach or whatever. And if you don't get on with them, they can be quite harsh on you and make it difficult for you. And like a fellow from Ireland, you know, when you're not going home to your mother and father, you're not going home to your friends and whatever, it's very, very
and
difficult.
And you're young as well. You're not very young,
individual. It really is. There's a great argument now for the lads going through, particularly UCD and other colleges, and staying here and getting their education. Then maybe, right, when they get their degree, off they go. I think there's a really strong... But again, until we improve the infrastructure here, it's very, very difficult to sell that one.
Lee, where are you starting college? Sorry, where are you...
I'm doing a psychology on the Open University, so... I'm doing it all online, so I can work around my football
time. A couple of players have done stuff to the Open University. I think maybe Gary Rogers and a few others might have done some stuff. And like, do you find it daunting going back into that sort of education? Yeah.
Yeah, like I haven't done proper education in like since school. Like I've done a few courses on the education you do over in the academies. Like everyone will tell you it's a disgrace.
Really?
They're
just
ticking boxes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm really excited. A bit nervous as well, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember it does seem to vary. I remember speaking to Daryl Lenihan, who would be around the same with Daryl Lenihan, similar generation. I think he went over to Blackburn, but I think he might have done the leaving cert from England, I think, or something. And they sorted out an Irish tutor for him, and they were obviously.
Yeah, they will. They accommodate you, all right.
So in certain cases, but it's obviously like, just as you mentioned, the stories I hear, it sort of depends on the individual player that they have to be really, really, really well up for it. But naturally, like if lads if you can see it's not the club's priority, it's not going to be your priority either. You know, it's going to drift. You know, and I mean these stories, like I sort of admire people who go back into it, because I mean, was it something like, was it in the last year you just realised I just need to address this?
Or? No, I just don't want to be 31, 32 going, oh, what am I going to do?
Going so to McDonald's,
I've got time.
Or something like that.
You're absolutely right. Yeah,
yeah. I've got time. Sorry, lads.
What age are you now, Lee?
24. Mm. So I've got time. Like, finish training every day at 2:00. Why not go and do it now?
Why psychology?
I have a big interest in it.
Really?
And it's like probably go off and do sports psychology after. I don't know, I'll see. But
you could stay an hour extra after the show. Take us in. Yeah.
Where is that interest developed from? Or where is it?
I think it's going to get big in sport. Well, it is big in other sports. Football, it's going to get bigger. And like, it can really help you. Other sports are using it more than football.
Mm.
Like, there's such a big space to improve by using sports psychology. We actually have someone in St. Pat's this year. Harry Kenny brought someone in. And, you know, if you buy into it, it definitely will work. You have to buy into it now.
Yeah.
But also the other side of it is, I think there's a lot of lads struggling mentally. That's not why we brought someone in. We brought someone in to get the best out of us and make sure we're in the right frame of mind, stuff like that. But there definitely is a lot of lads struggling as well mentally.
Well, even you look at Spurs last night and you can just tell some of them players aren't really happy in themselves. And then if it goes to a deeper level, and you know, Pats have had obviously issues with some certain players this season. It's people don't see that though. They just think you should turn up and play.
No, like, there's so much more to it. We're human beings as well, so your life outside the pitch is going to affect the way you come in and train and go into games.
I suppose, just getting back to that academy thing, like, I've had this debate with people in horse racing that so much money from the government goes into horse racing and very little actually goes into football. So if you have a bet, for example, on a League of Ireland game, the profits from that goes into horse racing and the greyhound industry, right? But the argument from horse racing is that horse racing is actually an industry in Ireland and that it's like big in the rural communities and all that. But the government don't seem to notice that football could be an industry in this country if they actually put money into it and supported academies. And because I think one thing we have is Irish people generally want to live in Ireland, and a lot of people who go to England aren't happy, you know, and especially if they're not making it. Like, you look at Jack Byrne, since he came back, he's in the Ireland squad again, very, very happy living with his mother. And I think that's one thing we have anyway, and I think there's huge potential there if the government and the FAI could grasp it. Like,
yeah, definitely, I agree. Just going back to what you were saying there, like, he's living at home. That makes such a help, you know.
Oh yeah,
get your dinner made for you.
Yeah,
you're of course in the same situation. Get the dinner made every day.
Yeah, that's even it. You're washing, like, it's so simple as you're washing. Someone to talk to, even someone to have an argument with. It doesn't matter. It's someone there that you love and you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of TLC. It's amazing.
Well, I got on well, great with me. Diggs family in England, but they're not your mum and dad.
No, that's what I'm saying.
So that's the difference.
Are you a football background? Are your family footballers? Or
no, like, my dad follows football, but no, there's no real football background.
I guess we'll come back to the general chat, but let's get to the FAI Cup. Dan Bowes, Shamrock Rovers, patchy enough type of a game.
Yeah.
Routine enough for the Hoops.
Rovers won it. I thought they won it pretty comfortably, to be honest. They maybe weren't dominant. It was a word I used after. It probably wasn't accurate. It wasn't that they were dominant, but they got the early goal and they sort of managed the game. I mean, in fact, I spoke to Ronan Finn after the game, so I might throw to that now, because I just spoke to Ronan Finn a bit about the game itself, the achievement for Rovers of actually beating Bowes.
He did have a few interesting comments here as well.
Yeah,
bit of a bite back at the Gypsies.
So let's hear what Ronan Finn had to say.
I know, like, there's still a big job to do in the final, but you've had a thing with Bowes over the last couple of seasons that's hung over the club a bit. Does it feel like that burden might be off the shoulders? I know you beat them in Tala, but this is maybe even a bit sweeter doing it here, I would have thought.
Without being, it is a lovely place to go and win and to get into a final. It is, as a player, it's a very, very hard place to come, especially, you know, playing for Rovers. It's never an easy place to go, and I'm supposed to get into a cup final, winning it here, you know, is nice. I felt beating them the last day, you know, definitely took that edge off it, took the edge off them. That's what I felt that they clinged onto. They had that over us for, you know, a season and a half, where they always had it and the media built it up and, you know, their fans built it up. They can't beat us, you know, and all of a sudden that little cloud starts to come over you. Then when we done them in Tallaght, that was lifted and we felt there tonight, you know, just go and play. We kind of spoke about it. Take all the drama away, take all the flares away, take all the atmosphere. Us against them. Just if we played them in a Phoenix Park, would we fancy to beat them? We said yeah. So that's it. We just treated it like not the semi final, not the build up, just us against them. I thought, like, we limited them to very little now, and I'm not saying we dominating or battered them the whole game, but I thought we were professional and we managed the game well, and you know, probably top 2-0 was probably fair enough.
Yeah, because the I think your manager said earlier in the week that it wasn't the performances that was ever a problem in the Bows games. He felt it was just a mental thing. And I mean, I'm sure if I was interviewing you before a game, you know, earlier in the season, you'd say all the right things about, but was there that seed that was just there? Maybe it was an unspoken thing amongst players, but it was just these games were causing you grief for whatever reason.
Not so much maybe last season, but definitely this season, that little bit of extra pressure that we didn't, you know, that we hadn't beaten them. I think the season before, when I first came back, we beat them 3 times. We were going to beat them 4 times in a row, which never happened. Shamrock Rovers, I don't think, have ever beaten Bows 4 times in a row. So they'd done us a talent. So all of a sudden, it flipped the other way.
Yeah.
And, you know, we couldn't do them. So, but listen, I thought beating them a few weeks ago kind of took that edge off took the edge off, you know, the toy itself. I thought that's what they clung on to. And I thought they were disrespectful as well in some of the things they said. We use that as motivation. You know, we know how good of a group we are, how tight we are. And we use that.
Some of the comments after the games that they won.
Yeah. I think, like, you know,
maybe it's James Talbot comments.
You know what I mean? You win with modesty, and that's, you know what I mean? That's it. And like, we used that and thought tonight they didn't really get close to us in terms of. I thought we were quite comfortable without battering them, like I said, without really, you know, owning the ball. We got the ball up to Aaron probably quicker than we generally do. We played the conditions a little bit, we played the kick a little bit. We normally always try and play out from the back. Kind of didn't do that as much today because that avoids them on, because they're really good at pressing high and really good energy. We took that away from them a little bit and got the ball up to Aaron. Aaron was a handful for their boys at the back, and then we started picking up second balls and playing from there.
You've been here for a couple of years in this stint. Like, do you feel that this is the next step, you know, to get? And I know I've heard you say in another interview there, it's well and good getting to the final, you have to win it. But just in terms of prolonging this season with the league being gone, that just to have something to aim for now for the next month.
Massively. For the fans, it's huge. Like, I mean, you speak to the fans and it's hard because, like, they say, yeah, it's been 32 years. And, you know, you feel that pressure, you know, we need to get there for them. I suppose the manager will say, well, this is our group, you know, we've been together 3 years
now. So this becomes the new thing now, does it? It's not beating Bows, it's the cup famine, the next thing.
No, and that's the pressure playing for this club. You know, you're always asked questions, and you'll continue to be asked until you're successful. We have to win something to be recognised. You know, we can play lovely football, you know, easy on the eye, people come and watch us and, you know, compliment us, but you've got to win something. You know, you can be, you know, suddenly forgotten about in a few years' time. You have to win something.
Yeah, so that was Ronan Finn. I mean, as he mentioned there, they didn't appreciate some of the comments from Bows players after games earlier this season. I think he was referring to James Talbot comments and maybe one or two others.
Yeah.
But as he said, like, the Rovers had a game plan on the night. They sort of had to manage the conditions a bit, and they did it quite well. They mixed it up. I don't know if you see the game, Pat?
I did.
I mean, Rovers seemed like they managed the situation pretty well on the night.
Well,
you obviously have a very good relationship with Keith Long, of course, so you'd have a different viewpoint on it.
Very good is probably, you know, he's my son-in-law.
Yeah.
So
you don't get on with him that well.
Exactly. I get on with his grandchildren.
A different relationship.
No. I get on all right with Keith. But football, look, particularly in the Cup, I always say, you need a bit of luck, and you need to make a little bit of luck.
They got luck with that corner as well.
The corner, you know, went against them. Bad defending, you know, they just didn't get set up, and all of a sudden you're one down. And, you know, to be fair to Rovers, they dominated the game, and you know, then the sending off really summed it all up. And the best team on the night won, and I don't think anyone can argue with that, you know.
I was very disappointed in Danny Mandrew's challenge. I thought, I've seen him do it a few times this season, but I thought he let his teammates down.
Yeah, it was a red card, wasn't it? But to be fair, like, Rovers were the better team from the start, I think. So even in Dundalk and Sligo, Dundalk were the better team. I didn't see Sligo's penalty show. I heard they had a very good show for a penalty.
But
the two best teams are in the final.
The interesting thing was looking at a Graham Burke's goal threat that Rovers have suddenly gotten. Like he scored, he nearly scored another goal. He scored against Bowes the last game. He's almost been the difference in the way in those derbies and
headers as well. I mean, yeah. I think Graham Burke is a sort of a technical player, but actually it's two big headers that he's delivered in those two derby matches. Mm. And actually, I think in one or two other games that Rovers have played since Burke came back, I'm actually not sure if they've quite figured out how to accommodate him. I think that's actually maybe hasn't been great in one or two of the matches as well, but he's delivered big goals in those two big games. So, you know, it is the final that probably is, for the organisers, it probably is the best case scenario, as much as that would annoy people from Bowes and Sligo. Mm. And I mean, it was a great occasion in Sligo the other day, and the Dogs just finished really strongly, and as they do, you know, that's why they have a 30 game unbeaten run. They know how to win.
It's the relentlessness when you bring on, like, the impact Georgie Kelly has made off the benches.
But even in the cup, the cup this year, the Dundalk have been on the road the whole way, and up in Derry in the previous round, I mean, it was Kelly came in late, got the injury time winner, and the other day, and I mean, yeah, you've been on the pitch with them, Lee. Like, they just have this efficiency, Dundalk, that they never, you're one of the teams that actually beaten them, along with Sligo, the two, but they never seem to be out of a game, really.
It's fitness levels. I know for a fact, because the new manager is trying to bring it into St. Pat's now. Mm. It's the intensity they train at, and, you know, they have such high standards. And in the last 15, 20 minutes, when other teams are getting tired, they're not. That's why they're winning games, Lee.
Mm. You spoke of the new manager. What's he been like?
He's come in, just demanded really high standards. As you can imagine, you know what he's like as a player, and you can tell that's what he's won so much as a player. And yeah, he's slowly trying to change a lot of St. Pat's. So far, everyone's happy, and he's got that respect off the players straight away.
Is that something, as players, you're curious about, that he's been such a big part of the Dundalk success, and you're trying to get to that standard, so you know you're trying to pick things up off him about that? You mentioned that you can see in the training that there's just something different. Can you tell that this is their culture, that they're trying to bring it in
I'm sure he's putting his own stamp on things too, but he probably is bringing some things from Dundalk as well. And yeah, you can definitely tell, like, the intensity is the big one, and demanding high standards from each other in training, and then eventually you bring it on to Friday.
That's interest from each other in training, yeah. So yeah. It's like, how does that work?
If someone's not working, let them know. Yeah. Mm. And maybe at Pat's, we probably were a bit nice with each other, not just this year, but over the years. But that's what he's trying to change.
He did. Stephen O'Donnell did. Roy Keane was more or less his hero. You can kind of see that, maybe, Pat. That, like, well.
Well, you have to be strict. I mean, you have to have the discipline, and you do have to look for high standards, because if you don't, it's just going to fall apart anyway. Mm. And if you're trying to catch a team like Dundalk, you know, let's be honest, the Dundalk remind me of the great German side. They just keep chunking out these results. They just keep getting at it. I mean, the other day against Sligo, they weren't good, and yet they came out and they got the opportunity. And there you go, they're in the final. Mm. And like, Rovers are a good side. They play good football. They've become very good players. Would you bet against... get them, you know, to beat Dundalk? Probably not, you know. And yet, it could be a very entertaining game.
I think it could be some fun.
Yeah, I do.
You
know, I think it could
be hope so.
And
yeah.
Like, there's a potential to nearly sell Absolutely. It out if you really work that hard.
Yeah,
at it. Like,
I agree.
It was 36,000 for Sligo Rovers, for Sligo and Shamrock Rovers. Dan, it was the final, kind of, in that if you get a nice weather on the day.
Yeah, you have to look at all the factors. You know, thankfully, the opposing Premier League that afternoon isn't, like, I think it's Everton, Spurs. None of the traditionally well-supported teams are involved. So, like, if the weather is kind, there's a great opportunity, and, you know, it should be sold strongly. I think the Dublin involvement does help. I mean, there's always seems to be a comparison with the ladies' GAA final, just because they've done so well with the attendances. And I mean, they've done great promotional work on that. But actually, also, if you look at it as well, the attendances have gone up since Dublin got into the final. It's a massive factor. You know, they're busing kids from around Dublin to the games, and that's a massive factor in the growth in those attendances.
Mm. There has to be an
intelligence in the marketing of it, though, as well. That, like, there's a good, it's not just let's just come to the game. You know, there's two good sides. There's Jack Byrne, who's in an international squad on merit this time. And you have a team going for a historic treble. Like, it has all the ingredients to be marketed, and the tickets are cheap. So if you can't do something with this, then you can never succeed with marketing the game in this country, full stop. You need more from sponsors, you know, like Extra.ie have done some stuff online. But like, I, you know, didn't have necessarily,
where are the billboards?
Haven't necessarily put,
where's
their,
Jack Byrne,
haven't put their stamp on the competition.
And
I'd be, you know, that's something. But I mean, these were deals that were done. You know, that's this is where we're at. There's a lot of stuff, obviously discussions at the moment about sponsorship and various deals and how it's happened with the league. But we hope, Pat, I mean, just to ask you, and again, we're not to age discriminate here, but you're well placed to judge like great sides.
You're really dancing around the subject of Pat's age. Kind of like you're well placed.
Basically, Pat,
you'd know 20, better than
26,
we would.
26, you're not
Pat,
really.
Pat, yeah, as a 45-year-old, Pat. No, you've seen the...
I had free travel on the way. You're all right.
Yeah. I was going to mention that. Yeah. Lee had to pay. Pat's aren't even putting it up either.
I can bring you as my partner, Lee. Relax.
You've seen, you remember the Rovers 4-in-a-row team. You can even go back and remember teams before that.
Yeah.
This Dundalk 5 leagues in 6 years. Like, where do they stand? Where do they rank? Where do they stand with the great League of Ireland?
It's always difficult to sort of, you know, compare. But I think this year for Dundalk, major change with Stephen going, and a lot of pressure, you know. And I would have been saying to myself, well, very difficult for Vinny to produce, you know, what Stephen has produced over the years. And here he is now on the verge of a treble, which is an amazing achievement in his first year as manager. You know, it says a lot for the man and it says a lot for the players. And I love what Lee said. You know, if players are not doing it on the training pitch, and does anyone monkeying around, it needs to be sorted by the players as much as management and coach. Those days are gone, you know. I remember the days when I was back here comparing like Dermot Keely and Pat Bourne and Mick Bourne, some great players, and you know, compare them to the players of today.
Different character.
Different, totally a different environment socially and otherwise. And you know, I always remember the days coming back from a game in Derry or in Finn Harps, and we'd all meet in O'Connell Street and go into Rumours, and you know, you'd have your few drinks and a bit of laughs.
Oh, I've heard so much of it. I think
at the Gresham.
What a great name for
Rumours. A place for a lot of activity happened in the Jack Charlton days. I think if you were to do if you were to do a sort of it's before my time, but I think even some of the journalists used to go in there.
They
as
did,
well.
Yeah,
it was a sort of a big coming together place.
Everybody,
the walls
don't have
booths
like that anymore. Lee.
No,
sorry.
Pubs like that anymore.
No, this wasn't a pub, it was a nightclub. You might get home the next morning. And the guy who owned it was a fantastic football fanatic who was involved in Spurs as well, Krishna Adu. And he was a very generous and really good man. And he looked after all the League of Ireland clubs, but there were different characters. And when the game was over, it was a bit of laugh and a bit of crack. But there's some great players, some great teams. I mean, the Rovers teams under Jim McLaughlin were fantastic. Then Keely went on to win 3 or 4 leagues as well. So it's difficult. I mean, you take Dundalk, what they've achieved in recent years. Like back in 2012, they were in the first division.
Yeah, we had John Gill on, was it last week, saying that he felt like they were walking the plank if they didn't beat Bowes. What was that, 8 games in, 7?
That's right.
I found that extraordinary.
And the bit of weight suits John, doesn't it? You know,
it does. Yeah, he's a lovely tan as well.
He always has a tan. He lives in Donabay.
you're from Donabay. Of course,
but it's funny. You could have gone to Dundalk around 7 or 8 years ago. That was the story at the time.
I'm sorry,
pre Sean McCaffrey, wasn't
look
it?
Look at you now.
I'm sorry I didn't go, because I'll be honest with you, I felt sorry. I'll never forget the day I was on the verge of going to Dundalk. 2012 it was, and we'd agreed everything and was going, and Keith Long was coming up with us, and there was a bit of aggro in Bray, and I said, they'd no money, Bray, and the usual, and I went down. I always remember it was a bleak around the 23rd of December, and it was bleak. And I went into, there was no one in Bray, only the two people in the office. And I went into with the intention of saying, I'm leaving. And I just said, I won't. I'll stay another year with them. Within that year, there was more there. Yeah. And I left the following year. So Dundalk went off then, and they got Stephen
the year after.
Absolutely. Because I got a call at the same time. It was something, and they said, they're going for Stephen. And I said, well, you couldn't get a better guy. And fairness to him, he done a fantastic job. And like Vinny coming along again, and as I said, on the verge of 3 trophies. unbelievable achievement.
I have this just image of like you know when Dougal was selling Ted, or Ted was selling Dougal that he was going to America, and Dougal had these puppy dog eyes. Were they the two lads in the Bray office? Just like, I can't tell them 2 days before Christmas.
I tell you, it was. I was fairly soft because I walked in. There was a girl there and the general manager at the time, and I just felt, geez, if I walk out here, leave these, it's poor to Christmas, and I'm going to tell them I'm packing in. The whole thing could have fell asunder, and I just said no, I won't, and that's what I did.
There's
I stayed,
history for
you,
know.
There you go. I was just trying to think actually what struck me. So you were break. You would have had Chris Shields and Dane Massey.
Oh
play.
Yeah, they all played. Yeah, Gartland, Shields. Who else? Rogers, Gary Rogers was there after yeah. Eddie Gormley. Yeah,
but in, I'm thinking in particular Shields and Massey. Well,
yeah,
but they have 5 league medals.
Yeah,
both of them. Did you see that in them when they were younger players? I think Shields, it seems, have surprised a lot of people.
I remember saying to Chris, I have to say, I'll be brutally honest, you're mad going to Dundalk. At that stage, they were only rebuilding. I said, you won't win anything. You know, they're not ready for that yet. And to be fair, they really have invested in it, and they really have done it. And obviously, you know, Chris has just been fantastic for him. And what a career move. And Chris, to this day, is the same guy who played in Bray. Fantastic. I always remember Chris when we played in the infamous playoff with Monaghan.
The wall.
The wall. It was an incredible story. You know, I mean, here we are. We're into 2 minutes of injury time. And Chris scores an OG in extra time. And we're one down. And all the 20 fans of Monaghan knocked the wall down. The wall came right down onto the pitch. And I remember Keith Long saying, "Jeez, what are we going to do now?" And I said,
"Abandoned the game."
No, I said, "I hope the game's abandoned." And anyway, I looked out, and referee sorted out, got the wall sorted. And I looked up, and here they were, all right across, like the Charge of Light Brigade. 2 defenders, and all across the pitch. And they tipped the ball off, knocked it back to the defender. He wallied it right up into the left-hand side, and he got a cross in. Chris Shields, who had scored OG, comes across and knocks it down. Their goalkeeper, Sava, he had a great game, drops it, and Jake Kelly knocks it in, 1-1, and we win on penalties, and Chris Shields got the winner. Unbelievable. They made up a little thing about it, the great escape, and it certainly was. It was no Steve McQueen, but it was a great escape. Yeah, and you know, that's football, and Chris has had a magnificent career, you know.
In a way, you must kind of be looking at him, because, I don't know, are you a defensive midfielder? That's my position for you, but some people say you're a centre-back.
I'm in and out of midfield, to be honest. No, like, I'll do a job there if the manager wants me to, but my favourite position is centre-half, yeah.
Centre-half?
Yeah,
what do you make from Devo? What's his best position?
He's a good player. He's always been a good player, in fairness to him, you know.
Just a good player.
You know, 24 now, he needs to move on and start winning trophies and doing Absolutely. A bit better for himself. Because, again, we're going back to the players, and you're right what you say, fellas having to go on the dole and different things, and I'm not just getting away from it, but there's managers and coaches as well, and they give a lot of time and a lot of effort, and when it comes to their time and it's finished, I'm on the lucky ones. I actually love what I'm doing. I adore it. I get up every day, 24/7, I'm lucky. But there's lads who can't afford that, and when they're let go, there's nothing else.
Well, I felt very sorry for Harry Kinney because of the circumstances. What's it like as a player when that happens, Lee, I suppose?
Obviously, there was speculation a few weeks that, like, the manager's job was, you know, on the line sort of thing. But we actually had great few results before the UCD match. Beat Sligo at home after being a goal down. 1-1 in Turner's Cross. And we put ourselves in the next round of the Cup as well. But yeah, like, over the course of the year, we sort of, as players, we weren't happy about a few things, like just sort of the tactics and the formation even. But everyone got on great with Harry on a personal level. Like, we had a good relationship with him like that, but it was just so disappointing the way he left, because, like, that UCD game was a disgrace from our point of view. I don't know what happened. We just didn't turn up on the night. There's no excuse. We felt responsible for that. It wasn't Harry's fault at all. You know, we prepared properly. He'd done everything he had to do to prepare the players properly during the week. But we didn't turn up on the night. We were a disgrace, to be honest. There was no excuses. And then he went after that. So we were disappointed because we all got on well with him on a personal level. But it's happened now. And as I said, the new manager's come in, and everyone is happy at the minute and it's exciting for the club.
Stephen O'Donnell and Patrick Craig was very left field. Stephen O'Donnell obviously picked Patrick Craig, but were you surprised that Stephen got the job given his lack of experience?
Just the other candidates out there, you know, we didn't know who was going to get it. Probably was a little bit surprised, yeah, but as I said, he's come in and done really well so far and has a good first impression on the lads. And also, Padge Craig, he's only retired like a couple of weeks. And
he's up ship from Scotland.
Yeah.
To Montrose, yeah.
Yeah, you'd swear he's coaching 20 years. Like, he really demands a lot from the players and, like, so far, so good.
I suppose what's interesting as well is that you have, what, 3 or 4 games left this season. You're fighting for Europe. And some of you know that your position at Pats is on the line because this manager may not like you, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, there's 11 signed up already for next year.
Are you one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so I signed a 2-year deal last year. But, yeah, I mean, I remember my first year at Pats, like, at the end of the season, I don't think there was one player signed. So that's where the club has progressed like that. They're giving players longer term deals. They're planning for the future. But yeah, on the next, well, Waterford on Friday and then Bowes and Derry, they're just massive games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
season defining game.
You've an interesting fixture logjam coming up in that obviously you had last week off and now you've Waterford and you're obviously hoping to be Waterford who are kind of playing out season a bit, but what happens then?
Well, Derry have 2 players called up to the under 21 side who are supposed to play after Waterford. That's called off now. So the last week of the season we play Bowes on Friday, Derry on Tuesday, Dundalk on Friday.
Dev, I think that's ludicrous and I'm not trying to blame anyone here. I just think at how important Europe is for Pats and for Bowes and for Derry, and to have 3 games in a week I just think is outlandish.
Well, I think a lot of fixtures, and I say Lee and a lot of people agree, I mean, I heard you talking about mental health area, but your own physical health and safety, playing those amount of games midweek, you know, 3 games a week, every week, it's just impossible. You can't do it, you know, when you're part-time. It's very difficult to do it full-time, but to do it on a regular basis is ridiculous, and the fixtures themselves is madness. And as you say, at the end of the season, you know, you're working so hard, and then all of a sudden, within a week, you've got 3 massive fixtures to decide whether you're in Europe or not. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I have less of an issue with that one. It's the fixtures earlier in the season. I mean,
yeah, this is earlier on.
I mean, this is an international call-up this late in the season. Yeah.
What do you do?
You know, there's only so much you can do. Yeah. I mean, you can have a debate about, you know, teams not playing when there's the FAI Cup weekends and so on. I mean, but this one, unfortunately...
Such a big game for the top 4 as well, Dan.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, in a lot of leagues in Europe, to be fair, you'd have 3 games in the last week. We've seen it in the Premier League, you know, in recent years.
In the last week?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like you think of, was it Liverpool a couple of years back when they played Crystal Palace? That was in the last week of the season, wasn't it?
Midweek.
I said the Monday night game, actually. But still, it can happen. You'd have rescheduled games at the end of the season. It's not ideal. But anyway, Pat, speaking about the other end of the fixture scale is that the teams in the first division whose season is already over... And they've a long off season, which has already kicked off. Thankfully, you're not in that boat because you've got a playoff game on Friday, or your 2-legged playoff game against Longford and successive Fridays. I mean, it must be great to be involved because it's been a journey. And maybe just talk about where Cabinteely are at the moment, because obviously there's been a bit of discussion in recent weeks about where the club stands. But this playoff game, what does it mean to the club and the overall project?
Well, I suppose a lot of people in the club would be delighted if the season was over. That's being honest. We're in a bit of a situation where we could have actually 6 games now in the next, you know, 4 weeks.
And you haven't prepared for that in terms of budgets or whatnot?
Budgets and things like that, yeah. I mean, you take Drogheda, they haven't had a game, won't have a game for 4 weeks, and they have to meet wages and things like that. So Longford and ourselves, at least, we're going to be playing and we'll know exactly what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks. We've been in the top 4 all season. You know, to be honest with you, I think we've underachieved. We've lost points to not being disrespected, all the teams below us. We've lost to Limerick twice, 6 points. 4 to Cove, that's 10 points. And 2 to Athlone. You put them on, we'd have won the league. We're only a point behind Drogheda and Longford. So we've been there all season, and I think it's very funny the way where our blip took place. It took place when lads were going off to do their leaving cert. We had to give them 3-4 weeks off. Mm. And that'll tell you a little bit about our squad. And there was 5 players who went off and we gave them 3 weeks off. And that's when we hit the dip. And, you know, but we've had a great season. I mean, we've been thereabouts all along. We've led the league for a little bit, delighted with it. The playoff is a fantastic opportunity to get into the next round, which is against Drogheda. We played Longford twice, 3 times this year, and we've beaten them twice. We played Drogheda, won one, lost one, and drew one. So we're in a nice place.
Very nearly beat Cork in the Cup as well.
Well, no, we should have. We beat ourselves that night. We threw it away. Game was over, and it was a very silly. But the lads have been great. We have a great...
17 goals for Manly?
Manly has, you know, when we signed him, I remember saying to him, I said, look, Rob, you know, you went to Drogheda, you went to Bowes, and you're not getting games. So I said, you know, I'll give you games. It's up to you then after that. And to be fair to him, he has just been exceptional, you know, and fair dues to him. And the rest of the lads have been brilliant. The staff we have, is you mentioned young Clegg, but we brought in Paul Heffernan at the start of the season. Paul had a great career in England and Scotland, yeah. And we got Graham O'Hanlon, Eddie Gormley, and John Parr, the goalkeeper coach. And we two kit men that are second to none. And unfortunately, we lost one of our long-serving kit men this year. He passed away a month ago, Lockhart Davis. But we have a great little setup. You know, we're based in Camtiddy. It's not everybody's, you know, place, but it does need to be developed. But from us, from a training point of view, it's been brilliant. The players are exceptional. I loved what Lee said there, and our lads are the same. There's no let up, and anything we do, it needs to be top class, and there's no exceptions. The club, in fairness, are great when we're travelling. Everything is top class, anything like that. Yeah, you know, are we ready for the Premier Division? The answer would be definitely no. There's no point in, you know, bullshitting about it. We're not. Will we take it if it's there? Of course you'll take it, and then you'll get on with it. But like UCD and Finn Harps, it is a struggle for clubs going up, particularly if they don't have the you know, the finance behind them and the support. So that's going to be difficult, but we cross that bridge when we come to it.
Will you be okay if you don't next season to play in the First Division and continue on in the League of Ireland?
I said to Danny, what we do really, we were at a meeting with the FEI quite a while back. All the clubs were there, and they said, look at all the possibilities. I'm there to help at Capitini and advise them, and that's what I do. And I really go in very open, and I say, you've got to look at all your options, because we've got 2,000 members in the club and 1,000 playing. So that's 3,000 people. Are we attracting enough? No, we're not.
2,000 members?
Yeah. Mm. All the parents, and they should be doing more, and they're not doing it. We've got 65 teams. So really what you have is 65 clubs winning a club, because each club is only just looking after, or each team is just looking after themselves. So if we could sort of win that little battle and bring them all together and improve the support, improve the fundraising, improve things, that we would have a real, real chance of moving forward. Mm. But that's been a battle, and we're still working on that.
With respect to UCD, though, and to a lesser extent Bray, there's a massive catchment area around there for League of Ireland football.
Unbelievable. I'm born reared out in Dunleary, and I mean, we just played football on the streets. People think when you're from Dunleary, oh, you were born with a silver spoon, you know, but we actually played football on the street, and it was an absolute great area for football. And Joey's was the big club, and of course, Cabotilli came on many, many years later. But no, but again, socially, things have changed. I mean, a lot of clubs are gone now for various reasons. The Leinster Senior League clubs was full of them. They're all gone. There's one Leinster Senior League club in the area, I think, TK and Cabotilli as well. But that's it. Mm. After that, there isn't. But yet, there is an opportunity to grow it there. But I think the biggest problem we have is our own club. If we don't grow from within, it's very difficult to grow from outside. So we have to look at all the different options, and that's what we're doing. We're looking at the finances. We're looking at the football side. We're looking at our facilities. We're looking at everything, and we're trying to improve it as we do every year. And every League of Ireland club will do the exact same. So everything is on the table, and let's see where we can go from there. But the first priority for me is obviously Friday night. We want to beat Longford.
Get a big crowd into Stradbroke.
We should on Friday. Mm. But of course, this storm coming in now, who knows what's going to happen.
Bit of a concern. Yeah.
Hopefully it just stays away and we can have our own storm on Friday night and look forward to it. Dara Doyle, an ex-player of mine, and also ex-Cabotilli, he's manager of Longford. So it'll be an interesting two-legged game, and may the best team win. But I think we're quite capable of doing it. We're really good side, some really good players, and there's a lovely little catch to it. We signed a Japanese Japanese guy, Utah.
That's right, yeah.
Utah Sasaki. And incredible, he scored a great goal against Wexford last week. You know, unbelievable. And he has scored, and he's missed a couple, but great little addition to have coming on. And we've a great squad of players or two to leave out now.
The League of Ireland hasn't really tapped into the Japanese market yet, you'd have to say.
We're on our way. we will conquer it. Someone made a comment the other day. Pat Devlin signed Chris O'Connor back in 2002 when Ireland played Australia in the World Cup, and we were beaten, the Rugby World Cup, and then he signs Utah Sasaki.
And Japan beat it.
And Japan beat it, so it's my fault.
And you have a goalkeeper there whose father is it Peter Quinlan, whose dad is with the Japanese staff, isn't it?
No. His father, believe it or not, his father came over here many years ago, and he played for Blackrock.
Yeah,
he's a Kiwi, and he actually played for Japan last week.
He played for him. Oh,
yeah,
sorry,
he played.
He's 38. Yeah, sorry.
38. He did. Yeah. He played for Japan last week, and Peter came back on. He was back on Monday, so him and Utah were running around together with the flag.
Well, if you haven't been to Stradbrook, lovely little bar there. Nice night out, and obviously needs, you know, upgrading facilities and all that. But it's a great place to watch a game Friday night. Cabin Teely versus Longford Town. The return leg then is Friday week in Longford. Lee, where do you start with your? We do have to wrap up, but this is a fascinating race for third and fourth. Got into Europe this year and probably beaten by a better side, I suppose.
Yeah, well, you just look at the fixtures. I mean, we play the two teams that we're battling against.
And Dundalk.
Yeah, and Dundalk.
And Dundalk play all three. So yeah,
and Bowes and Derry played each other last week, I think it was. So it was a great finish. But as bad as, you know, we haven't been good this year. We haven't created enough chances. We're not entertaining to watch. We're still there.
That's a bit harsh.
No.
Easily.
No, we haven't.
You're not entertaining to
Johnny,
watch, Dan.
Johnny, why not? Let him talk.
Let him slate his own team.
Don't argue with him on his own team.
Let him slate his own team.
Everyone that goes to Richmond every Friday will tell you that. Like, we haven't been the same path, and the players will tell you that too, but
Hang on a sec, right now. Like, remember your goal in Derry, right? Yeah. So you were accountable for some of this because you clearly can't strike the ball, but we don't see it. That goal in Derry was one of the goals of the season.
It didn't even celebrate it.
He started kind of giving out.
Oh, I was so angry I was because the week before I had a bad game and probably gave away a goal or two, and it was just a lot of relief, to be honest.
That's what it was. I was trying to wonder because you scored this amazing, people haven't seen this, Lee scores a wonderful goal, and rather than celebrating it, you're sort of
because
he looked like Timori Ketsbaya in Newcastle that time. Do you remember? That's why he started kicking the advertising board.
I just beat myself up a lot, like after I make mistakes or have a bad game, so it was on my mind all week, and then when I put it right the next week, then there was a lot of relief. So that's what that
if
was.
If you haven't seen that goal, look it up.
Is this why you relish the psychology side of things, though? That you obviously analyze, but some people would walk off a pitch on a Friday, have a bad game, and they'd have forgotten it by the time the bus has pulled out the away ground.
Yeah, that's what I need to get better at. But I am a lot better than I was, say, a year or two ago. But I used to bring it home with me, and it'd be on my mind for a week, sort of thing. And you feel like feel guilty. You feel like everyone, when you go in the Saturday morning after a game, you feel like everyone's like, oh, he let us down last night. But that's not the case at all. You're making up things in your own head, but I wouldn't say that's why I'm doing the psychology course. No,
stop fighting with yourself, because I can tell you, at the start of the season, if you'd have got the position you're in now, you'd have been saying, I'll take that. And it's fantastic that you have the opportunity to get into Europe.
Yeah, so, but we do. We have to be honest. We have to be honest with ourselves. Like, we haven't lived up to expectations, should I say. But we're still right there. And, you know, the next three games in particular will be absolutely huge.
How much do you enjoy the European stuff?
Oh, great, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that was the first time we started. No, second time we started, but over and over in Sweden, the atmosphere was absolutely brilliant. Mm. And we got great support from the Pats fans.
Unbelievable goal from Conor Clifford.
Yeah, what a strike. But probably my best memory, like, so far playing in the league was probably in my room the night before we played. We played Norrköping away. You could hear the Pats fans a few hundred metres down the road singing all the songs. And it was just brilliant to think, wow, they're after travelling over for us. Like, and yeah, that was a good experience, good memory to have.
Dan, I think Timori Ketsbaya managed Georgia, didn't he, after that?
Ketsbaya, he did.
He did, of course. That's next up for... We're going to let the lads go, and myself and Dan, then we'll, I don't know, have 10 minutes of psychology, I suppose.
Well, I mean, that's every week, John. To be honest.
Well, you need someone to stay with you then.
Stuff that requires stuff that requires analysis.
I think Devo should stay in the background just to monitor things. But I should mention as well, the one untapped audience for the cup final is all these, like, of all the taxi drivers I've gotten in over the years in Dublin, the white guys anyway, 98-99% of them used to go to Milltown. I mean, so surely they can come back and support Rovers, because there seems to be an awful lot of them. I can't wait for the cup final, but a lot to debate before that. Thanks a million for coming in, lads.
No worries.
Very honest interview from Lee Desmond and obviously Devo. Best of luck at the weekend.
Yeah, we keep it going anyway. See where we go from there. Maybe we'll be back in again and we can forward it a chat. I enjoyed it. I'd like to talk to Lee about Newcastle a lot more as well.
Well, you can go out and get the train together. Yeah.
Discuss it off air. You're trying to get Lee on your pass.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Thanks very much, lads.
Cheers. Thank you. Okay.
That was Lee Desmond and Pat Devlin. Both came in on the Dart line today. Devo now is going back south side and Lee is going back north side. So
they were a bit perplexed by your Rovers tangent again about your taxi driver's experience.
The amount of taxi drivers.
I know, yeah. It's just
Rovers have a huge, I used to go to Milltown support.
They do?
Probably don't go to Talla at all.
Well, that's why, like, Monday, was like the anniversary of the Rovers Pats game and the RDS, game in 1990, the first game in the RDS where there was 20 something thousand people there.
One of the worst games of football ever seen.
It was a dreadful game. But it does advertise how, you know, I think that latent support, people who's in the cup final, Rovers, I'll go. I think
they're not going for three in a row.
They're not going for the treble. That will definitely add something to it.
Yeah, the weekend's fixtures, as the ones we mentioned, obviously, Bows are playing Cork City, and Bows are getting Cork at a good time there, Dan, obviously, with another hammer in Derry last week. They've had a pretty appalling run of form, actually, and you'd imagine it's a good opportunity for Bows. You just wonder, are they on a bit of a downer after Friday, or do they just get on with it?
I think it's a big sort of mental test for them, because there was a downer on Friday. They didn't really perform as well. They didn't really show up. But Europe is still massive. I mean, Dundalk winning on Sunday means that fourth place qualifies for Europe. So the Bows are very much in control of their destiny.
Derry played Dundalk. Now, I don't see Dundalk.
At least Dundalk Derry would at least go ahead with if the weather does turn, at least Dundalk Derry, you would think, unless there's some sort of weather warning. But it does seem like it mightn't. I'm not sure if it'll affect that area of the country so much, but
Derry have a good record against Dundalk.
I don't know, like, Dundalk, this is the first game where really they're tuned out, because I don't think they will be, but it's the first game where really there's nothing at stake as such, other than their points targets and individual stuff that they want to do. Hooban has a bit of work to do to cement just the top scorer. He's got 2-goal margin of error there, and just a few other things that, like, I think I don't think they'll phone in at all. I think Dundalk would be aware of their responsibility to the other clubs.
Also, the players know, like, I can't be slacking here, because do you know what I mean.
So I don't think Derry, in a strange way, like because the result doesn't matter as much, but it does matter. I wonder, would you get a more liberated Dundalk? Like, they've grinded results out, but will they actually sort of? Could it be in a positive sense that they're unleashed? And the games with Derry, I mean, Derry have come back. You know, they've in the League Cup and in the League game and the FAI Cup game, they found a way to score against Dundalk. They found a way to pose them problems. So that's a fascinating game. Pat's Waterford, I mean, it doesn't sound great pitch wise from what Lee was saying.
I think he said it's waterlogged.
That could be a struggle. I mean, Waterford are safe. They've done well. I mean, Harps UCD. I mean, Harps is such a pitch that's vulnerable to rough weather. Harps really just need to. I mean, this is a great chance for Harps to cement their status as the playoff team. I mean, the only way that they can drag them into automatic bottom is if they lose this game. And really, it's a must not lose. They'll be absolutely fine.
Then they'll be grand otherwise. And it's a bit of a shame that Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers is a dead rubber, because it's obviously a big fixture in the showgrounds, which looked great on Sunday. I think it was Callum McFadden saying the atmosphere was unbelievable. Love that every week. And bit of sympathy for Sligo, even though it's very hard to see if they'd have won the replay, but, like, Ronan Coughlin should have gotten a penalty in hindsight, and little things went against them, but they produced a good performance.
The replay would have generated a few quid for them, you know. And they're a club that have spoken about the excellent fundraising that they do, and I mean, I think they probably had earned the draw in a way, as much as Dundalk were the better side. But then when you switch off as they did, I mean, Duffy makes the run. Like, you watched the replay, and it wasn't just like Duffy was in the right place. He made a a deliberate move from the start of the set piece. That was a plan, and someone didn't follow him. So they've switched off there.
I did mention Georgie Kelly earlier on. He must have a good case to make for starting at Dundalk. He's probably not going this season, but the impact he's had, even in Europe coming off the bench, unbelievable. And again, a massive header down. Hooven looked disappointed when he was taken off, which is kind of understandable. But just Georgie Kelly looks like a player that's ready to kind of step up to the next level.
His record has been great, but he's possibly in danger of being in the Kilduff territory, that actually he is so effective off the bench. That's a perfect role to have him in. You know, it sort of becomes a condition that he's a great option to bring on, because when teams play Dundalk, they get tired in the last 10, 15 minutes of the game because they've been trying to keep up with them, and he makes hay in that scenario. So he ends up with that super sub label, which probably ends up frustrating him because he thinks he can do more, and he's played in games and started in games and done well. But yeah, I mean, the Sligo Rovers, Shamrock Rovers game, I think it's possible Mick McCarthy might be at that game to have a look at Jack Byrne. We'll see.
No surprise, he was in the squad, really.
Mick has pretty much stayed loyal to all of his players from last month, really, which is controversial in other areas with younger players, but it's definitely benefited Jack that he's kept his place on the basis of what he did. So
the Ireland under 21 Italy game is going to be fascinating now with all these players there and sold out and all that.
Yeah, well, we can deal with that. And yeah, next week, because the game is Thursday week, so yeah, we can maybe discuss that in more detail.
I'm off to Georgia as well.
You are?
Yeah. on a bit of a jolly, so looking forward to that. Right. You've been there, haven't you, a few times?
I've been there. I've been to Georgia too much in the last couple of years, so I think it's the third or fourth time, I think. So anyway, we've been there a bit.
Just imagine if Jack Byrne came on and got the winner. Be a bit of fun for a League of Ireland fan.
It'd be good fun for Irish football.
Any chance he come off the bench?
We have to stop distinguishing him from the rest of the, you know what I mean?
It's a League of Ireland podcast. It's great. It's so rare that League of Ireland players are
involved. I know, but look,
I know what you mean, but any chance he could come off the bench?
I'd say it's on the smaller end of the scale. Ireland play New Zealand in a friendly at home in November. I'd say he'd be odds on to start that game. But I still have a slight niggling doubt that he would be trusted by McCarthy if he really was chasing a game. It's possible. If there's any game that would happen, it would be Georgia, because just the tempo, the flow of the game, and the style of the game might suit him more. But I think Alan Judge is probably still ahead of him as the sub in that position. If there was a problem with Judge, then Jack, I mean, his dead ball delivery is a massive thing, which you would actually maybe push him up the queue. But then again, Alan Judge did send the dead ball for Shane Duffy in Copenhagen. So he's probably just that one person then, the pecking order, I would think.
We mention earlier on that Derek, our former...
He's back.
It's like
League of Ireland football, it's such a like a volatile
small
transfer
circle,
market,
yeah,
that someone comes back to the club again.
Give us an example.
It's like an old favourite coming back to the club. Like, I'm trying to think of a reason. There's loads of examples.
Devo coming back to Bray,
or you know,
Vinnie Farhady coming back to Galway United again.
Vinnie Farhady coming back to Galway, and how many stints is he at there?
Yeah, 17, I think.
Or the players that come back to Cork, you know, after
Marco
years,
Sullivan.
Alan Bennett coming back, you know,
yeah.
Alan Bennett is like a beloved figure.
Yeah, AB
arriving back, and
here's Derek.
Because people who follow us on Twitter who might have like you know remembered the more colourful biographies
of the
LOI Weekly Nights,
the Bob Dylan references,
with slightly strange pictures of women in unusual situations, like sort of 1970s comic, you know, with a caption quote, and then you know describing I don't know our discussion on like Rovers Pats, you know, it doesn't quite fit in. But Derek is responsible for that. But Derek's here. Derek has a request. More to the point, because Derek is working on a project, which makes it sound like Derek's a shifty individual.
Yeah, but especially with that reference to women in the 70s. Come on, Derek, tell us your request. Anyway.
Well, I'm looking for footage. I'm looking for footage of photographs of, would you believe, Limerick City between 1960 and 1975. So 50 years old. I know.
Photographs like, and...
Or video footage. Yeah.
Footage.
Or movie footage or home video footage or anything that can...
We must have Limerick fans listening, and it might just be that it's... You know, the next generation up, you know, their dad or their, you know, granddad, whoever it might be, they might have kept some stuff. But you have a more specific request than that.
Yeah, it's a right back who played number two, Vinnie Quinn. I'm looking for footage of him, preferably. He played in the same team as Kevin Fitzpatrick, Al Finucane, and Joe Casey. It was a team managed by Ewan Fenton, and they won the Dublin City Cup in 1969. They also played in the European Cup Winners' Cup versus CSKA Sofia in 65-66. And they played against Torino in 71-72. So if anybody has any footage, can they get in touch on Twitter or get in touch with yourselves, lads?
Mm. There you go. Yeah, well, I mean, we'll definitely try and spread the word as much as is possible. Because, you know.
I know it's a big ask.
Is he still alive?
I'm not sure.
Mm. So it's kind of a like a montage that you're hoping to put together in a sort of way.
Yeah, I can't really say too much about it, but it's an anniversary for the 1969.
Yeah,
lovely.
So he's got a job to do, but if anyone out there can help, definitely.
I think we have a good chance.
You can hit us at LOI Weekly, at LOI Weekly on Twitter, or you can contact either myself or Johnny through social media, or Derek at Kioski, is it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah, on Twitter.
Kio with the SKI at the end of it. Bit of a Russian vibe. I can't really talk about Derek's Russian stories here, because we will run way over time and possibly be cited in some way or other.
Let's go off air now and talk about Derek's Russian stories. Thanks very much for listening. Episode 34, season 3.